Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 12 on Tuesday, the 24th of November, 2015. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
How are we doing this week? I need to find a new way of saying that, don't I? Never mind.
It's okay, it works for now. Yeah. Unless you're going to bring a trumpet in or something.
I could do.
Yeah, I'm not too bad this week. I've been busy with work, so I haven't seen too much of the motoring world apart from watching Panorama, which we'll discuss later last night.
Yes, let's keep that one for later. I think people following me as I was on the train into London this morning, follow me on Twitter anyway, rather than creepily following me, as I was on the train the way into London this morning, sort of got the gist of what I feel about that. But never mind. Meanwhile...
No, you've had a busy weekend though, haven't you?
I have, yes. I decided to break free from the chains of the United Kingdom and spend a weekend in Paris with my mum and my little sister. So, having spent a day and a half being trailed around some big department stores in the rain, I did get a little time to run off down the Champs-Élysées and go into some of the, I don't know if you know, but quite a few brands have these sort of brand showcases on the Champs-Élysées, and they're not dealerships, although some of them have sort of, they've got salesmen. But they are just a way of showing off concept cars and showing off new ideas. And if it hadn't been still slightly French lunchtime, the Toyota one, for example, has you can drive a GT86 race car simulator. They've got Le Mans cars in there.
Would they have got you out if they...
I know. Well, sadly, it wasn't open again until 2:30, and I was sort of... I had run away and left Mom and Jane to go look at handbags. And so I was in there, and then Peugeot had the Fractal concept that was shown at Frankfurt.
Oh, yeah.
That everyone was saying lots of nice things about, and I can understand why. It's really quite cool.
Well, I've seen your video, which will be in the show notes, everyone. Go and have a look.
Yep,
it's exactly. Interesting. And I was particularly... I've got a warm, fuzzy feeling when you were in the video got to the Citroën area.
Yes. Some well, I love nice ones there. I love that. They've always got some fun stuff in there. Sometimes it's ultra modern stuff. If they've just launched something new, and other times they do like to show off and wheel out some of their classic collection. So yeah, there was a couple in there. There was the GS Flesh, which FLE. CHE, isn't it? Arrow, anyway, in French. And some of these kind of things. And a fantastic Schatzback rally car, if you are into Schatzbacks, the name of which escapes me right now. But yeah, go have a wee look. It's on the YouTubes. So see, have a wee look. There'll be another one going up as well later, tomorrow, maybe. By the time this comes out, which is just some of the sort of day-to-day car spots seen around the streets at Lancia Fulvias and Fiat 500s and that
nice.
Kind of thing. Yes, quite. So not all shiny stuff. And I love wandering around Paris because it's lovely to wander around, and also because there is some fantastic stuff on the streets over there. But anyway, enough about French cars and French cars and French motor manufacturing. You've got some news about British motor manufacturing, haven't you?
Yes. SMMT announced this week about how the British car manufacturing achieved its best 10-month performance since 2005, which is great news for, we here on this show are staunch supporters of the manufacturing that happens in this country and the engineering and the skills and expertise we have in this country.
Yep.
Even though we don't have what was historically called a British motoring industry, we still do have a motoring industry. And it's something we should all be very proud of. And I get teary-eyed whenever I watch that Top Gear special where they bring everybody in outside Buckingham Palace, all the things that are made. That was one of their finest moments, I thought, because they actually showed how good we are and we can be, and we should support it more. And
it's one of the things that we are particularly awesome at in this country is engineering and manufacturing.
Mike Halls was talking about Howe. He is the SMT chief exec, and he was saying, he was acknowledging that there was a dip mm-hmm. in the output in the last month, but it's still, we're still doing very well.
Yeah. And a lot of that was to do with gearing up for new models as well, rather than it just being a dip because there was a dip.
Yeah.
It's sort of people getting ready to bring new stuff on stream. Yeah, which should be good.
But it was good to see the exports as well.
Yeah.
Because it was more than 1 million British built cars have been shipped to global markets in 2015, mm-hmm. which is great.
Yeah. I've said before, I think, that I live in the Midlands. I live in Corby. And not only do we have a big rail depot for Peugeots coming into the country and another one for another big holding pen for Renaults and some of those, but we've also got quite a lot of car transporter companies are based here. And a new one's just kind of, well, a new one. One has just moved into a formerly vacant industrial lot around the corner from me. And they sit there and there's the transporters are sitting there and they are covered in export plate sized, you know, so they're either going to the Middle East or to the US white Range Rovers and long wheelbase Range Rovers and Range Rover Sports and Evokes and all these kind of things. And they're packed. It's British cars all ready for export. I think it's fantastic to see.
Yeah, I'm not too far from the Liverpool docks, so I obviously get to see the Jags and the Land Rovers and all that sort of stuff and things that are going abroad. And like you say, it's good to see. It's good to see.
Fantastic to see.
But enough of British manufacturing. You spotted something this week, didn't you?
Spotted many things, but one of the ones this morning that was one of the things I spotted this morning to keep me sane was a blog on SpeedMonkey, so speedmonkey.co.uk, about just not dying of boredom behind the wheel and how boredom is incredibly dangerous. Is incredibly dangerous when you're driving. And the whole thing about just, it's so not worth having a boring car, which I thought was fantastic. It was a really good piece by Matt Hubbard, which he wrote in the middle of last night or something.
Yeah, he's been quiet for a while, so it's good to see that he's back writing again.
Yes, yes, it really is. But no, I'm not going to go through the piece, but it's well worth reading. There'll be a link in the show notes. But that's just one of those things that it's worth. It's only a few hundred words long, but it's worth 5 minutes of your time to read, I think, because just the points he makes are so right all the way through. Just, it's all about paying attention and enjoying it and just having fun and enjoyment when you're driving and how that makes you much safer. It's good stuff. So yeah, that was it from that one, really. It was just a little thing that we'd spotted from, because Matt's a good follower on Twitter and stuff. So he's one of the people who gives us loads of good feedback, so much appreciated. He writes some really nice stuff, so good to see that back.
Yep. Moving on to the what seems constant theme or topic, Volkswagen and the fallout now from Dieselgate. Whilst all Dieselgate stuff still goes on, there is a freeze on the CapEx. Well, they're going to reduce levels of their CapEx, actually. Sorry, not to be right about this.
Yes.
They are going to keep it to approximately 12 billion euros next year, which sounds enormous. So goodness knows what it was going to be beforehand.
Yes.
It was going to be 13 billion. So they're keeping a billion out of it.
Yeah.
One of the main victims of this is the design
center,
yes, in Wolfsburg that's going to save them 100 million euro.
Mm.
That must have been one heck of a design center for 100 million.
Yeah, so that was the planned new one, not the existing one. The existing one can stay, but they were planning a new design center, and cancelling that, you know, that kind of makes you Sorry, not cancelling it, putting it on hold, pardon me. That kind of maybe explains the sort of the news about Walter De Silva last week and stuff as
but
well.
But they'd already said as well, hadn't they, that the brands themselves were going to get more autonomy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that sort of makes, if you're going to give them freedom, then you don't need a centralised design centre.
Aye. There's some other bits and pieces which, I mean, the reason for this is the, oh my goodness, we're not quite sure how big these fines when they arrive are actually going to be. And so it's making sure that they've got the money aside for this and they're not spending money that they may well then need to try and get back by more drastic measures. Yeah. But one of the things that they came out and one of the first things they said was, look, oh, the new Phaeton, we're going to put it on hold. We're not going to put it on hold. We're going to redesign it. Am I going to make it completely electric? Well, they did that. They said that a few weeks ago, and now it's been delayed.
Yeah, I just thought that was one of those, oh, we'll say something positive. It just came across like that. It came across very much as we need something positive to say, okay, we'll make the Phaeton electric, and we'll deal with that later on. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, they're having to deal with it. So it that's not clever. From a PR point of view, but I mean, the fact it's going to be an electric Phaeton's brilliant, but
yes, yeah. So they're being quite close, and it always seems like lots of money whenever you, well, it is lots of money, but you know, to make the tooling and stuff and the actual investment in production lines and stuff is always going to be incredibly high. And they've got, yeah, they're building new plants and all sorts of things, which they're already committed to, hence it's. You think, well, you know, it's under 10% of a cut there.
Yeah.
But actually, that's a lot of money towards, you know, it's a lot of money because it costs a lot of money to do these things. And they're not sure just how big these fines are going to be.
Mm.
Yeah.
But you spotted something else, didn't you?
I did. Well, there was an article in the FT. Now, the FT is behind a sort of paywall. So I now can't get back to said article on the FT. So I think you get one shot at reading it, which was rather good. And it was in the FT they were saying that VW was choked by complexity. And it was an interesting one because, you know, as someone who's done a bit of design in the past, it gave a few examples of stuff. Right at the minute, the current generation of Golf, you can get 341 different variations of front seats. They'd have two completely different sets of internal lighting designed, one for left-hand drive cars, one for right-hand drive cars. There's something ridiculous like over 100 different steering wheel variants out there that they're trying to slim down, you know.
But this is been always said ever since manufacturers started doing the very much the personalization ability,
yeah,
which really, really hit the fore with Mini,
mm,
and then the Fiat 500, etc. Is people going, yeah, but that actually costs quite a lot of money to do, as opposed to, you know, there's seven colors,
mm-hmm,
and there's three interiors and there's two different types of seat. Off you go.
I mean, once you start thinking about it, it doesn't take long for the numbers to build up. So front seats of the Golf will in future have 259 variations instead of 341, which doesn't seem like a huge decrease. But when you think it through, you've got the sort of base spec seats in a couple of colours, okay? You've got mid-spec seats in a few more colours in manual and electric. And a couple of leathers in there as well. And then you've got the sports seats. And then you've got the seats for the R, you know, the GTI. And they're going to be different again because they're going to have different coloured stitching.
Yeah.
And then you've got ones for the Rs. And then, you know, again, across the colours, across the left and rightness, you know, because we've got one side of the seat has to have the controls on and everyone else has to have the other side of the seat with the controls on. It doesn't actually take that long before you're about 259. The two different types of internal lighting is a weird one, though. But there we go. But yeah, it's funny the stuff that's been cut. I mean, we were saying in the when we were chatting beforehand about standardization of steering wheels, because that was the kind of headline number. And it's amazing just how many manufacturers are really, really standardizing their steering wheels. So Jaguar, for example, sure, you get some with some buttons on, some with fewer buttons, but it's basically the same steering wheel from XJ to XE. Sure, the quality of the leather might be different on the outside. Stitching might be slightly different, but actually the expensive bits to make are all going to be exactly the same right the way down, and I'll bet it's exactly the same airbag that's in every single one of those.
Yeah, because, I mean, I would have thought, maybe this is my naivety coming through here, not being involved in this, but I would have thought that is one of the key interface areas on a car.
Mm-hmm.
You'd want that to be the nicest possible experience, no matter how much the person's paid for it.
Yeah.
So to have a POV-spec steering wheel, I mean, it depends on what's different, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, sometimes, you know, in some countries there are variants, like there are vans and stuff, and there's very basic ones. So you don't want the leather-wrapped one. You want the plasticky-wrapped one for various practical reasons.
Yeah, but, I mean, like you say, with the Jaguar, you know, it's essentially the same steering wheel. Because I don't know this, maybe that it is just a materials and button thing, and there's that many combinations of materials and buttons. But you'd want, if I was selling a car, I'd want someone to be, every time they got all the steering wheel, to, as a minimum, not notice they were holding the steering wheel. At best, enjoy holding the steering wheel.
Yeah.
It's like the driver's seat needs to be the comfiest seat.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, there's a number of brands have that way. It's the same steering wheel right across, and they've, you know, because if you design one really nice steering wheel, then that saves you a lot. You know, it probably takes about as long to design a really nice steering wheel as it does to design a rubbishy steering wheel.
Yeah.
So you might as well do it right and then make those kind of cost and parts savings, you know, on the steel pressings that go inside it and the plastic moldings and all that kind of stuff. Because to be honest, swapping out the leather is actually really easy to do, because that's just the very last stage
for
most of them. But it's the plastics and all that kind of thing that cost lots of money to implement anyway.
Yes. But moving on, still Volkswagen.
Still poor Volkswagen. I actually am at the stage of poor Volkswagen, especially with this next one.
I don't think it did much damage to Volkswagen, but it's the BBC Panorama programme, which I did watch. The things I do for you, dear listeners. Wow. What a load of tosh that was. It was heralded as telling us new information and for the first time ever how VW had conned the EU rules or tests, etc., etc., etc. And it didn't tell us anything that the good people in the motoring press haven't been saying for 8 weeks.
Oh, come on. It didn't tell us anything that we hadn't been saying, and we're hardly the motoring press. I'm sorry. Guys, folks, it was this morning on the train, it was 29 minutes and 5 seconds of agony I put myself through for you guys. Okay? As soon as the first thing they basically were on about, we've fallen in love with diesel guzzlers. I swear, if I hadn't felt duty bound to watch it because of this podcast, I would have given up in under 20 seconds. It was just, it started with the tone and you just thought, oh, it's going to be one of these. And it was right the way through. And there was nothing new. You know, they went through and they went, oh, look, we've tested this. And they had to go to the Czech Republic to find an emissions testing you know, a sort of developmental emissions testing center that would do it, which gives you an idea of just what everybody else they approached thought of the idea, really. To do and to record this, they went through and they tested a Passat Blue Motion, and they put it against, you know, and they did it against the testings, and it was just fine. And then they did it not against the testings, and it wasn't just fine. And so then there was a, so then they said, look what we've shown. And then there was a lady reading out the statement from VW, the female voiceover, over some sort of sad and gloomy music with some sort of, with some grey stormy pictures in the background, basically saying, reading out a statement from Volkswagen that said, yeah, that's what happens. We know. This is what we're trying to sort. That basically was it. I'll paraphrase slightly. And that was it. So that could all have been done in 15 minutes. But no, we had to have, sorry, Andrew, I'm on a roll. We had to have the sob story bit. And I don't mean to take away from the girl that was interviewed and involved in that, but I'm not convinced it had anything to do with Volkswagen at all. Sure, there was lots of pollution in the middle of London. Yes, this is very true. Trust me, I spent far too much time there recently, and I can tell you that that's the case.
Well, that got me particularly angry. That area where they then went on to say how wicked and evil diesel cars were,
because that bit about walking along Oxford Street, where he walks through Regent's through Hyde Park and going, oh, you know, I'm all chilled and calm, and look how low my heart rate is. Now I'm walking along Oxford Street. Look how high it is. That must be because of the nitrogen oxide. Now, I'm really sorry. I'm stressed. Nothing to do with that, but because I'm walking along Oxford Street and I'm trying to avoid the chuggers, avoid the everything else that's on Oxford Street, as opposed to wandering along the side of the Serpentine, which is what he was doing at the start of it. It's the fact that it's Oxford Street has a large, and I'm not saying that it's not nitrogen oxides. And it's only buses, and there's no cars. You can't put, you know, you can stand on Oxford Street all day, and I would be amazed if you could fill up two hands with the number of Volkswagen cars that you will see there, because it's just not.
Well, that's where the program took a turn, didn't it? It went from Volkswagen are wicked and evil to all diesels are wicked and evil. And, I mean, to be fair to them, but they did at least acknowledge that it was the government at the time said, no, diesels are our saviours. However, scientists at the time said, right, it's not good for people. And they have been saying it before the government changed their tact and gave incentives for people to buy diesels. And they have said it ever since. So to come out and say, oh, look what we found all of a sudden, that's utter, utter nonsense. I did say a naughty word in my tweet about it. Because that was one of the few points that made me genuinely angry with the program. The rest of it, I was just saddened. I was saddened that on a program that of alleged caliber, or used to have caliber as Panorama, that could be used for good of informing people of facts and useful information, and potentially cutting edge, or not cutting edge, but of investigative elements, and not just reading auto car and what car and what have they been saying for 8 weeks, and let's put a car on a rolling road and then we'll pretend that we've done all this research. Now, if they were just, it was lazy. It was as though the Daily Mail was in televisual format, and my hopes went high, because I've got a friend of mine who watched the security one who was incredibly angry with the BBC because they broke the law for their security one. Mm-hmm. So my hopes weren't high, and I wasn't disappointed in that front.
Well, there's a high charge that they could be in. There's a high chance that they could be in some kind of trouble over this one, given some of the inferences that were made, because they tested two cars.
Yeah, I thought that when they started showing the pictures of the second car from another manufacturer, they built it up as though they weren't going to say who it was from nor the rest of it, and it was blatantly an Opel logo on the wheel. And then they did a couple of cutback shots very quickly to show that it was a Zafira, and then eventually they did name it.
Yeah.
But I thought they were going to try and just say, oh no, we haven't named who it is. Oh, you can't possibly work out what car this is.
What was interesting about that bit was that they went through and it was a different, so the Volkswagen, which looked like it had belonged, which was labelled up as if it belonged to the institute whose testing facility it was. Okay. And then there was the unlabeled Zafira, because it was a Zafira. The unlabeled Zafira, and it just felt to me like they'd gone, well, okay, what have we got? Well, we've got the hire car, let's shove the hire car on. And the figures were all different.
Mm.
Now, there's an interesting thing about modern vehicle ECUs, which I'm sure most of you are aware of, and that's that they learn. So unless you reset the ECU or there's something about, you know, how many miles it's got to have been driven and stuff, then to be honest, how the vehicle being tested, if it's been out in the public, unless you reset the ECU and put them both through the same kind of drive cycle beforehand to make sure that they're equally calibrated to start with, then they will behave differently. Okay, this happens. You can very often test this yourself if you want to change from 95 to 98 octane petrol, for example. In many Japanese cars, you can unplug the battery for 20 minutes, shove it back on, the ECU's forgotten what it's done, and it goes back into learning mode. This is particularly useful if you happen to be fitting induction kits into Japanese cars, because they need to relearn how to... This is how I know originally, because they need to relearn how to idle, to cope with the fact that everything coming in is slightly different. So they sit there and they... a bit. And that's why you can also... And the same reason is why you can also find different examples of what should be an identical car, but they drive completely differently because they've learned a specific way of driving. So if you've got a Volkswagen Passat, to take a hypothetical example, which has spent most of its life sitting on a rolling road, trundling its way through the economy test, it's going to behave slightly differently to one that's been used as a taxi in somewhere, I don't know, Manchester. You know, it's going to behave differently because it's been subjected to different life, and therefore the ECU and everything will behave differently. Now, there was no hint as to the provenance of the Zafira, okay? And the Zafira could well have been the rental car, okay? And we know how rental cars are driven. Fastest car in the world's a rental, Peugeot Rogue. You know, and so it's obviously going to have something strange. And Vauxhall did say, you know, well, there must be something, you know, obviously there's something up with the calibration in that car. If it's been a rental, it could be anything. Absolutely anything. So there was lots of stuff like that. And they were basically trying to, one of the things that they didn't point out, whilst they went through and they did the test in Zafira and sure enough, it was within the numbers. And then they went and they did not the test with the Zafira. And all of a sudden, everything just went, it was all different. Of course it was. It's because you're outside the boundaries of the flaming test. Yeah. But what they didn't point out was that the Zafira did not have a defeat device in it, which measured the steering wheel angle and all the other stuff, which they did actually mention about the Passat. They just left it inferred. And Vauxhall were really on the offensive this morning, and all strength to them, were really on the offensive this morning about that and saying, look, we don't have defeat devices. Absolutely don't have defeat devices, and it's wrong to infer that we do. And so yeah, good on you, Vauxhall.
Yeah, I mean, they went further to say, we asked for the information and Panorama refused to pass it on. prior to the broadcast. I don't know whether they've passed it on since. I doubt it.
I'd be surprised.
Because Vauxhall are convinced that either the car wasn't right anyway, mm-hmm. And or the test even wasn't done properly.
No. I was a little bit surprised by the chap who had been a government tester for many, many years. Then all of a sudden, he seemed to suddenly have realised that the tests didn't really bear any resemblance to real life.
But again, this goes on the back of what we were saying about they didn't say anything new. Because even MPs know that the test is not mm-hmm. fit for purpose anymore, which is why they're in the process of renegotiating what it's going to be at EU level. Interesting yes. to note that the UK, France and Germany are trying to dilute this and actually delay the new implementation coming in
mm-hmm.
when they are centres for the motor manufacturers.
Yes, I was about to say, yeah.
So, you know, before we get all high and mighty over here,
mm-hmm.
we need to just be aware that our governments are not pushing forward to drive it in the same way that it has been driven in America.
Every pun intended.
Oh, God, yeah. Sorry about that, everyone. Oh, dear. I can't even help myself now.
Oh,
that's how sad I am. But talking of MPs, Alan.
Talking of MPs, that's good. I'm glad you beat me. Yes, beat me to it. They've lost it now. Talking of MPs and talking of diesel, goodness, you'd almost think we'd planned this. Common Select Committee in the Common Select Committee and a report to and by them has recommended some form of scrappage scheme for has recommended some sort of scrappage scheme to take some of the more polluting diesel vehicles off of our roads, as well as looking and rebalancing the vehicle excise duty or road tax, as us normal people refer to it, to try and discourage diesels a little bit more. Interesting thing about the scrappage scheme is that it didn't really mention cars. If you read through, there's an Environmental Audit Committee response to DEFRA consultation on air quality. It's a 35K PDF, so it's only little. It's only a couple of pages in black and white, and it's worth a little read, actually, because it's written in human terms. But the scrappage scheme bit, which people seem to get excited about, and I can understand why, is mainly focused at non-passenger cars. So it's looking at vans, trucks, buses, taxis, these kind of sort of more commercial end of the spectrum, sort of commercial vehicles and public service vehicle areas, to try and get some of the stinky buses off the roads, which I think is a good thing. It really upsets me, especially whenever they're used for. For school buses.
Yeah.
They always seem to be the mankiest, oldest ones that are used for that. And they sort of travel along in their own little magic carpet of smoke. And I just think that's the last group of people we want near those. For many, many reasons.
There's two things to this. The first one is if the widely predicted massive slowdown in car buying happens,
mm-hmm.
that everybody keeps saying so many times and so much that it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy soon.
Mm.
Bet your bottom dollar that turns to a car scrappage scheme to try and, like they did with the petrol. I think that's why our corner of the internet gets very twitchy about it, is because mm-hmm. so many good cars got binned in the name of a Deo Matiz.
Yes. Well, I agree completely. I do agree with that, but that's why I was trying to be vaguely reassuring.
But the second point is the picture of the exhaust pipes on the page that you will be able to find in the show notes.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Photoshop smoke coming out of the exhaust?
It's shocking, isn't it? I was just looking awful. At that. It's awful.
I would give it back to my 8-year-old son and say, do that again. That is rubbish.
Yes. Yes. Add some translucency to that layer, for goodness sake.
That is appalling.
Yeah, it is horrible. It is amateurish in the extreme. Dear. It might as well have just got a black crayon and drawn squiggly things.
Yeah, just written death out the back of the tail.
Yes. Well, there we go.
Okay, well, moving on from diesels.
Moving on from diesels.
Horribleness and everything. The Institute of Advanced Motoring released a...
statement of the bloody obvious?
Yes. They've done some research that said multitasking is not safe behind the wheel.
Yes.
Now, there has been many, many, many research things done. I'm so cross I can't even speak. That have said things like, even if you are using your phone hands-free, you are more dangerous than is safe.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, on that point, I used to work for a company that banned you from using a mobile phone in the car. So no one in the company was allowed to use the mobile phone while they were driving, to the point that when clients phoned up and said, I need to speak to Andrew, they'd say, he'll be back in the office in an hour. Oh, we need to speak to him now. No, he's driving. We do not speak to them when they're driving. You can speak to him when he gets back to the office. And the clients respected that and nobody bothered.
Yeah.
And why we're not, unless you're a doctor or a security / police person, you are not that important that it can't wait half an hour. Or for you to be able to pull over at the next junction or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But sorry, that's my little soapbox.
No, you're quite right, because I intentionally don't have my work mobile tuned into my car Bluetooth. And really, my car Bluetooth is only for the very few people who phone me on my personal one. So I can say, I'm driving, I'll ring you back.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, I mean, great they've come out and said it, but how much resources went into that to say stuff that we already know?
Mm-hmm. Well, quite.
Never mind. There we go. Moving on to something a bit more garish, though.
it's red, it's noisy, it's Fiat Northern Europe are actually going to be listed on the Italian Stock Exchange.
Not Fiat.
Oh, it's not Fiat. Oh, sorry. Yes, it just in my mind they are big red Fiats, noisy Fiats.
Oh wow,
Ferrari!
Oh my god,
Ferrari! Well, they are.
I know after this weekend things that you put on Twitter meant that there wasn't much hope for us ever to be allowed to look at a Ferrari, but now you really have put the nail.
No,
in
I'm
the
sorry,
coffin.
That was it. Yes, Fiat Chrysler, by the way. which is listed on the London Stock Exchange. Which is listed on the London Stock Exchange is no Ferrari Northern Europe is actually listed on the US. Gee whiz, this is not a difficult story. Ferrari Europe listed on Italian Stock Exchange.
Yay!
Humorous, because Ferrari in total. Listed on US Stock Exchange. NASDAQ, isn't it? US Stock Exchange. New York Stock Exchange. Okay. Yes. Goodness, I made a bum of that, didn't I? Fiat Chrysler, kind of parent, listed on London Stock Exchange. But yes. So there you go.
So were they? Do you think they're doing this because they did better than expected in America?
Quite possibly.
Or is it because there is Ferrari America now? So now there is
New Jersey-based Ferrari.
So now there must be Ferrari North Europe.
Now, that's an interesting one, because just after the stock exchange listing, I did see someone say, that there was a kind of maximum Now, was it number of vehicles or income level?
Oh, I'm sure it was a vehicle thing, wasn't it? It was 10,000 or something.
So they can't all be part of the same legal entity. I have a funny feeling that may have coloured the choices. Also, the fact that really it's Ferrari Northern Europe who would split out. It could just be coincidence because that's what large organisations do. They do these things so that they are many, many different legal entities around the world.
But what I'm
just
still...
in case they have a bit of a moment.
But what I'm still surprised, or I don't understand, because I don't know enough about these things. Why is Fiat Chrysler, who needs the cash? Well, they need the cash. They need the cash, so that's why they're doing it, to get the cash back in. But do they not earn more by having them? I mean, they've obviously done this calculation, but do they not earn more by having them in the fold rather than separating them from the fold?
I doubt it. It's not to do with earnings, mate. Absolutely. Normally, you find that these things aren't to do with earnings; they're to do with tax.
They're trying to reduce the tax bill.
Earnings don't matter so much.
They give you decent cash flow?
By not paying as much tax, corporation tax, and by choosing where you're based in this kind of setup, then the local tax laws can have influences on these. That's kind of as far as I'm prepared to go because I don't really know.
Because why I ask it is because the LA Motor Show, which we're about to go into, they revealed the Giulia, however you pronounce it.
The one that we can't pronounce.
Yes, that one. Again, only in cloverleaf guise. Mm. And everybody went, understandably, wow, this is amazing. Mm. And hasn't it been delayed again? I'm sure I read somewhere that it's been delayed again.
I haven't read that. What I had heard was that the online configurator is available, but I haven't played with it yet because of this sort of dashboard.
But it was already the back end of next year. The back end of next year.
I knew
delaying it again. So,
I missed that one.
Just that. I worry for Fiat, Chrysler, right. Alpha, all that. I do worry because I don't want this.
It's only because we care, guys. It's because we care.
Yeah. I want them well, and I want them producing lovely Alpha cars, and I want them producing quirky, fun, funky little Fiat cars. And things like that. That's what I want to happen, and that's what I think the motoring world wants as well. And I don't want to go on too much because
I saw a lovely Fiat Barchetta, by the way, in Paris, street in Paris. Beautiful silver one, little one.
How many dents?
None at all. None at all. It was absolutely lovely, and I thought, that's a nice wee car. It just looked. It still looked modern and cool.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I get to. Depressed about it all. Let's move on to the LA Motor Show, Alan.
Yes, let's. So, first up, we're going to run through a few things here because lots of stuff was announced. Lots of very focused stuff was announced from companies from all around the world in essentially a key market. So, one of the key ones, first up, is the facelifted Mercedes-Benz SL.
The more dynamic.
It looks a little bit like the previous generation SL, which was by no means a bad looker, but it looks like it's been kind of shoved in the wind tunnel and sort of blown a little bit, so it's a bit more. It looks like it's going faster when it's sitting still. How's about that?
Does the front end and bonnet remind you of any car we may have talked at length about last week?
It does a little.
Mm.
It looks like a dynamic sports car front end with big lights and stuff. I don't know. It looks more proportioned.
I like the look of them. I do.
The SLs have always... I'm trying to think if there's an SL which I've not kind of liked, and I can't.
I think it's nicely proportioned as well. You know, it's a nice size. And it's only got two seats, so I like that.
Yeah, that's always a win. All the coolest cars.
I couldn't take the kids with me, so it'd be fine.
Yeah, lock them in the boot. Yeah, so I like it. And remarkably, it's expected to be... Have I just read that correctly? It's meant to be cheaper. Yes, it is meant to actually cost less than the outgoing model as well.
Cool.
But yeah, lovely car. I really like... SLs are fantastic. They are always right at the top there of pinnacle of automotive engineering, right from the safety devices right the way through to the engines and everything else. Yep. I could have quite easily have one of those in my driveway as a daily driver.
Now, moving on, not so long ago, we were talking about an Impreza concept in Tokyo, and there's a new Impreza concept revealed. This time it's the sedan, because it's America.
Yes.
And again, I'm a little bit underwhelmed.
Well,
it looks nice, and it's handsome enough, but...
It's essentially the same front and middle, but with a sort of booted rear. And it's fine. It's fine. I like the colour.
Yeah, the colour looks good.
It's nice red. Does look good. Many of the press, the one that was on show was red, dark tinted windows.
Straight on from the front. I like that look.
It looks like the Tesla's evil cousin. There's a little bit, you know, there's a little bit of the old trapezoidal grill going on there, which is just everyone has these days. Nice headlamps. The wing mirror is a little bit concept-y. I think if you dialed down the headlamps a bit, dialed the wing mirrors a bit bigger and a bit more normal, then you basically got the production car.
Ding.
Production car, ding.
Drink.
Yes. Oh, another swig of water.
That boot though looks like it's got a massive access to it. That looks
it
a big, deep. Well, I mean, it depends how deep it is, but I mean, if you
remember that
the
boots are normally quite shallow in a Subaru because you do have to have space for all the four wheel drive gubbins under.
Of course, yes.
So it's worth bearing that in mind. Yeah, it's fine. It's nice. I like it. It's like, you know, you'd be quite happy to own one, but not as happy as I would be to own a Porsche Cayman GT4 Club Sport.
Just for your racetrack you have in the back garden.
Yes, for racing around my back garden. Porsche unveiled GT4 Club Sport. Same as the GT4, but dual clutch gearbox. Steering wheel paddles. It's a GT4 to the max, and to the max means that it's not road legal anymore, basically.
I think the Cayman is one of the nicest looking Porsches you can buy now. And
yeah.
That in GT4 Club Sport. I can't balance out Club Sport. It makes it sound so cutesy and as though it's some blokes down the pub who've got... we're going to do a bit of club sporting at the weekend. It's not that at all.
You'd like this even more than the SL, of course, because it's only got...
one seat. That's
it's only
perfect.
One seat. You can't even take...
No one can come with me at all.
And just when we're talking about simplifying, you know, the number of steering wheels and the seats, here you go. You can have a 90, 70 or 100 litre fuel tank if you want. So you can actually choose the different sizes. Size of fuel tank.
It looks great.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to have a go in a road one, not the GT4.
Yes.
I'd like to have a go in the GT4, but because it gets such positive press. I think they're the nicest looking Porsche at the minute.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know someone with a Boxster GTS. I've never seen it, but I know I've got it. I would love a shot of a Cayman. It was one of those ones that, you know, whenever you go off and you start looking at cars and stuff. And I looked online and went, gosh, these used ones are worth lots of money. I wonder how much they are new, because I might be just as cheap to buy. How much? It's a lovely idea, but I don't think I'm even going to go as far as the dealership. But yeah, no, I really like them. I think they're lovely. The way that rear haunch goes in, and then the rear hatch goes up, and even from the Mark One Caymans, it's just nice. No, I have a soft spot for them.
Yeah. But moving on to a car that you can use on the road and off it.
Slightly off it, yes, yes.
Onto a grass verge.
Mucky track, I think.
Yeah. The Infiniti QX30, which is a jacked-up version of the Q30 that was revealed not so long ago. Yep. And I think it looks really nice. I do like the look of these jacked-up versions. It's like the Volvo V40 cross-countries. I like those.
Yeah. I like the look of this, and you can tell I like the look of this because the sort of thinly veiled concept version of the QX30 that was shown at Geneva is, of course, the banner image at the top of our welcome page on motoringpodcast.com, which is why it might look familiar to some of you. I like these. I think it's a nice looking car. It's nice to see some good press coming along for the Q30. It's nice to see QX30. Whilst we're talking about Infiniti, and it's not really to do with the LA Motor Show, I did tweet that I was in an Uber in Paris over the weekend that was a Q50. And, you know, it was as comfy and blah, 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 blah as I was expecting, given it's the new version of the sedan version of my old G37. What I then realized was just how many of them there are in central Paris these days. So almost all 2.2 diesels, black. And whatever they're doing, whatever Infiniti Europe are doing to attract the private hire business in Paris, it's working. Because there are a lot of these very good-looking cars going around, incredibly comfortable.
So is there plenty of space in the back?
There seem to be. I mean, Mum and Jane aren't particularly huge. I was sitting in the front.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there should be decent amount of space in the back. Yeah, well, it's 5 Series size.
Mm.
So I don't know what you're doing, guys, but it seems to, as I say, it seems to be working. I've never seen such a concentration of Infinities. And I'd noticed there are always a few more in Paris than in the UK, but I did always wonder if that had something to do with where Nissan Europe's headquarters were.
Mm.
At least had significant seating. So yeah, really, really good. Yep. And I really like the QX30, actually. I think that's going to be nice. I commented earlier on, I'm falling back in love with Infiniti now that I don't own one, which is a bit weird. But no. Looks good. Looks an awful lot like the GLA, of course, in which it shares a underneath and transmission and stuff. But best of all that, built in Britain, engineered in Britain, designed in Britain. So nice British car then, the Infiniti QX30. That's why I'm spending so long on it. Yeah, it's the old designed in Paddington, engineered in Bedford, built in Sunderland. Sure. So, yeah. Moving on.
The Volvo Concept 26, which was a showcase of Volvo's next-gen interiors. Do you know what the 26 stands for?
I don't.
This is allegedly the average commute in America to work. 26 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, fine, whatever. Whatever.
Yeah, sorry. But I know, that's kind of, yeah. Why you would need... Sorry. It looks lovely, okay? So what it is it's basically heading... As we head towards autonomy in our vehicles, or our vehicles head towards autonomy, then, at least for significant chunks of journeys, then we'll start to use vehicle interiors differently.
Yeah.
And this is what it's looking at, is why you can't, you know... If you're not in control, you don't need to have the steering wheel taking up most of your driving space. So it can move out of the way, the seat can recline a bit more, and you can start, you know, and you can relax and snooze and work and whatever else people are going to do. That's a ding moment.
Yes. That's two.
I was thinking of the fact that I just fell asleep on the train on the way home tonight. You know, these kind of things. So yeah, it's a study of that kind of stuff.
I like the way that the in front of the passenger just flips up and it's this massive screen.
To be honest, it's so big, it looks out of scale with the rest of it.
Because it's just the driver's seat, and there's no passenger seat on the show stand. So when they do it, it does look all disproportionate. But I think that's a great idea. It's better than those iPads that have been basically super glued to dashboards or one little ones that flip up from the top of the dash.
I like the little ones that flip up, though, because they're little ones that flip up and it makes you feel like James Bond.
Which one's got the speakers that do that? That just rise up out of the dash?
There's some Audis that do that, and of course the air vents on the Jaguar XF.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not children at all.
I like shiny things. Give me buttons to press.
That was the Volvo is the wrong interior for that then.
Yes. I'm going to talk to it. Speaking of fun stuff, Volkswagen again. Poor Volkswagen. We're showing off the Beetle Dune, which is production-ready version of a concept that they'd shown before. If you're wondering what a Beetle Dune is, it's a lot like a sort of, I was going to say Outlander, and it's not Outlander. It's like a Beetle Allroad. Okay, so it is a slightly pumped-up Beetle. Sits a bit higher, bit of plastic cladding. Kind of bigger wheels, chunkier tires. In a way, it's meant to hark back to the Bajas, Baja Bugs, which seem to have been appearing in all sorts of places recently. Other than just my friend Garage, because they have a particularly lovely one that's one of the nicest in the country. You can see us taking some of the engine to bits in another video that's actually up on the YouTube.
I love the way you say "we" in that.
You can see Lorne and Colin taking the engine to bits. There wasn't enough room at the back of a Beetle for three of us.
Your Honor.
So you can see me standing at the side and handing, doing important handing of screwdrivers. In the past, I have been more involved in actually stripping down Bob's engine. it's a 10 mil higher,
a little bit wider,
track.
Yeah.
Usual
choice. It's okay. It'll sell a
stuff.
Few.
It's okay. It's kind of fun. There was a convertible version as well, which is a bit
awful. The back end looks like a PT Cruiser convertible.
Yeah, every time I see a Beetle convertible, I think of whenever the first new Beetle convertible came out, and there's a Sniff Petrol way back, Sniff Petrol's early days, and there's a Sniff Petrol cartoon. Fake ad, which is the Beetle convertible. Now you can hear them call your... we don't need an explicit tag for that, do we? Surely not.
I may have to bleep that out.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. You can work out what it is. Go look back, Sniff Petrol. It's fine. It's nice. It's fun for someone. There have been far, far worse versions of Beetles. And actually, I much prefer it to the standard one, which always looks like somebody sat on it. So, it's there. The colours there are taken from the Beetle Mexico as well, which is...
But moving on, because we can't go a show without mentioning your favourite car manufacturer. The Mazda. Mazda even brought out a crossover, the CX-9.
Yeah, it's bigger than ones we've had here before, but they've had a CX-9 in the US.
Apparently we're not going to get it, which I think is a shame. I think it's a really handsome... I do like the Kodo design language at the moment. I really do like that. I think it's really good.
Yes.
Seriously think it's a shame it's not coming over here.
Yeah. But the last one always looked a bit blobby. But it was, you could only get it with a 3.7 litre V6. The new one's a 2.5 one, which might be far too small for the North American market. But yeah, it's a nice looking thing. The old ones were nice looking things. This looks better than a CX-5. So CX-5 looks a little bit stunted and a little bit squashed.
I still think it's one of the more handsome of that size. Oh, it's
nice. Don't get me wrong. It's nice. But you just always think you could be doing with being about 8 inches longer. Mm. And CX-9 is a bit bigger. It is three rows of seats, and that's three rows of seats and practically no luggage, or two rows of seats and quite a bit of luggage space. Looks nice. Would I own one? Yes. There just needs to. So we've got 9. We've got 5. That leaves space for a 7 in between.
I presume that'll be the biggest one we get.
Which, in the 7. Past, would be the biggest one. Yeah.
But the front grille is big on that thing because it is a big car. That's a big grille.
And
it's really emphasised by the fact that the horizontal elements of the grille are quite emphatic. They're quite thick.
Chromey.
Yes.
And it's quite chromey in the pictures. But no, it looks nice. I'm scared to sound too emphatic as such a Mazda apologist. Yeah.
If you mean apologist, you took part in the Mazda Monday yesterday.
I did, but that self-publicity is no honour. I did describe it as cheesiness in my tweet. I thought that was perfectly reasonable.
To be fair to you, you did.
Yeah, so no, I quite like that.
Have you done all your Christmas shopping, Alan?
You know, I've almost done it. I've done it all apart from the man who has everything apart from any flaming hobbies, my father.
Well, that's simple. Actually, it's the candles from Bentley.
You know what? I'd be as well. Yeah. If BMW do a similar range, or Toyota do a similar range, I'll buy them. So his two favourite brands.
Well, yeah. If you hadn't done all your Christmas shopping...
If I hadn't.
Mm-hmm. Volvo have got something to help you.
Yes. Yes, they have.
They have now got the in-car delivery...
I love this.
...service.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, you need to be in Gothenburg to get this at the moment, but it will be...
That is slightly limiting when it comes to my Christmas shopping. I mean, I know I will be in Sweden before Christmas, but not Gothenburg.
But so. We do actually have a listener in Gothenburg. Hello, yes. At Bubba. But we salute you, and thank you very much for telling me all the stuff about the XC90, actually. I didn't realise the interior did all that. But this is actually quite clever. Now, as listeners may be aware, I am not always the most, shall we say, open to technology in a car.
Yeah, he has to cut little slits in his tinfoil hat so he can see out sometimes.
But this one, I can see how this could actually be quite a good thing. Because what the premise is that you will order something.
Mm-hmm.
You're ordering toys for your kids, and you don't have time to go to the shop. Mm-hmm. But the shop will come to your car, and they will be given a one-time pass that when they come to your car and press a certain whatever it is on their phone or...
iPad mini.
That your boot will then open, they will deposit said presents, shut mm-hmm. the boot, and drive away, and it's all in your car without you having to come out of your work, your home, wherever it is you are, and it's all happened for you. So you don't have the tedious thing of a delivery from an online store where the driver decides he'll throw it on the roof of your house, which I saw a tweet of that last night.
I saw that earlier in the week.
Someone sort of picture and said, can you explain to me why it's on my roof?
Or here's another one. You don't have it, so that your parents have gone to the bother of ordering something so that it arrives on a Saturday, and then you find that you've been away all day and it's Tuesday and you've missed the delivery. 4 days too early.
But this hypothetical is example. Actually one of those moments where it's technology that I think, yes, that is a good, in a small way, a useful way to make life easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a monstrous thing where it's going to take over how you drive, or it's not a big thing where it'll it's got ejector seats and it'll get you out of the way of an accident or anything like this. This is just, in the grand scheme of things, it's quite a small thing, but it will relieve an element of hassle in your life. And that's what we're all after at the end. We're trying to get through life as easy as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And with the least amount of stress. And I think this is a cracking idea. I mean, if you could do shopping, food shopping,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that as well, that would be absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's matt.se, which is the sort of, it's the Swedish equivalent of Ocado, really, looking at it. Apart from the fact it does toys, gifts, food and drink that you can have delivered to the car. So it's your supermarket shopping in this case. And that they're the only people you can do it from right at the minute. You can only do it if you're in Gothenburg.
Ding. Ding. Drink three.
And I'm sure you can... I know. Oh, gee. And I'm sure you can only do it if you have a certain models. But
well, what the Klaas Bendrick, who is the senior vice president and chief information officer at Volvo, says.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is wonderful for the press release, but I agree with the sentiment that if technology does not make a customer's life easier, better, safer, or more fun, we don't use it, and that is how it should be used. That I applaud. Well done, Volvo. Mm-hmm. I applaud the use of technology there, and I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah. There'll be a link in the show notes.
I'm going to have to go for a lie down now because I've just complimented somebody on their technology.
I know. Everybody's going to think I'm going to swap you out for someone else.
My normal service will be resumed. Yeah,
normal service next week. No, it's nice to have the... Oh, goodness knows. We need them to balance some of the other stuff. They'll really like that. I'm sure there'll be a link in the show notes to that page on the Volvo Newsroom. And the there's a little video, that explanatory video that goes along, and it shows how you know when things have been delivered and when people are there. So this is nice, lovely. Lovely one. Almost done, I think, for this week, but there's one last thing. Today is 50 years to the day since the UK's experimental 70-mile-an-hour motorway speed limit was introduced. So, yeah, happy 50th 70 miles an hour. And I think that's just about all we can say about that one, really. But yeah, 50 years to the day. Just happened to be.
No, it's a fun pub fact.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
That's good spot.
Different type of fun pub there.
I think that's it this week, Alan.
That is. I don't think there's anything we've missed. Goodness knows, I think we've talked about quite a lot to this week, really.
Yeah.
All that's left, really, is the usual roundup, to be honest. Andrew, how can people get in touch with you with their thoughts, opinions, abuse?
Well, abuse you can put on a postcard. But thoughts and opinions, or if you want to chat, then the best way is on Twitter, where I am at Cracked Windscreen.
Cool.
And how about you, Alan?
Pretty much the same. Twitter is always a great way. It's at AJP Bradley. And of course, there's a Twitter account for the show at Motoring Podcast. And if you want to send something in longer than 140 characters, then there's info@motoringpodcast.com, or you can just fill in the little form that's on our website at motoringpodcast.com, which is where everything ends up. Sooner or later, it is the hub of all our activities. So please go along, have a little look. You can browse through back episodes. There's show notes with links to videos, articles, and stuff that we've referenced. And yeah, lots of other little bits and pieces, little blog pieces as well. If you've enjoyed it, enjoyed the show, enjoy what we do, then a rating, a review, and telling your mates would be a fantastic way to give us a little bit of payback for the time and effort that we put into this and thoroughly enjoy doing. Have I covered it all?
I think you've got it all covered there, Alan.
Cool. Well, until next week, next episode, I've been Alan Bradley.
And I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.